We got beat by a really good UConn team. You know, obviously, we didn't have enough to compete in the way that we would have liked to. But now all is well in women's basketball.
Dawn Staley's interesting opening statement last night after a rough game against UConn, where the Huskies go 9 out of their first 10 from 3. Crystal Dangerfield doing most of the damage there. The first half, she makes all 5 of her 3, scores 19 points in the first half, and the rout was on. 94-65, the final score. The Gamecocks dropped to 0-7 all-time against UConn, and UConn certainly seems like they are on a message. They're on a mission to send the message, is what I'm trying to say. They're on the mission to avenge last season's Final Four loss to Mississippi State. The Gamecocks cannot punch their ticket to back-to-back Final Fours for the first time, but Asia Wilson ends her storied career with quite the accomplishments. A Final Four as a freshman, Sweet 16 as a sophomore, national champion as a junior, and then Elite Eight as a senior. Wilson leaving the game with a few minutes left to go, got the proper ovation. She scored 27 points last night. She did all she could do. The Gamecocks actually, I mean, you look at the numbers, they shot pretty well. They shot more than 50% on the game. I think they shot 56% in the first half or something, and they were down 21 at the break. There was just nothing that South Carolina was going to do last night to stop UConn. We mentioned Bill and I, we were talking about it going in, and on paper, from a motivational standpoint, everything was stacked against South Carolina in this thing. First of all, it was up in Connecticut's area, but this is a UConn program that feels like they gave away the national championship last year by not playing well against Mississippi State. And on paper, if you're going to compete with Connecticut, you got to do it from it's got to start in the backcourt. You got to be able to control their guards. Carolina was not a backcourt-led team this year. Their clear advantage was in the front court and Asia Wilson and going down low. And when you trade twos for threes, it didn't work out well for you. And it clearly did not work out well for the Gamecocks last night. But not to take away from another tremendous season and obviously a tremendous career for Asia Wilson, leaving as arguably the best player across any sport in the University of South Carolina's history. The resume, in my opinion, is pretty indisputable. It's tough to argue otherwise that anybody else deserves to have the label of greatest of all time. Asia Wilson doing it as the number one recruit in the country from Heathwood Hall and deciding to stay in town. And now 4 years later, it's been quite the run for South Carolina basketball, and she deserves a ton of credit for that. Disappointing, I think, frustrating for Gamecock fans. It was interesting to see the reaction in real time of the disappointment and going through that. It was, to me, unfair to think that South Carolina didn't have a shot to win the game. We talked about it going in yesterday. We mentioned a lot of things needed to go right, and South Carolina needed to play its best. UConn needed to play a subpar game to a large degree, and that almost from the jump was clear it wasn't going to happen. If you were talking about focus and motivation, UConn was there. It's not that South Carolina wasn't. It was just that the better team, the more talented team, played better, and when that happens, yeah, I think you get a final score like we saw last night.
Well, it was so quick. I mean, I think right off the bat, it was about 12-6, and it, you know, I'm not trying to be rude or be mean, but it was pretty decisive pretty quickly. And so it was not a slow death where you think, okay, we're in it. Everything that we kind of talked about yesterday, having to play a good game and UConn kind of having to be off their game, it was evident within about the first 4 minutes.
Well, the first 10 possessions that South Carolina had, do you remember how many turnovers they had?
I think it was four.
Six.
Six, okay, yeah. It was.
They only finished with 13 turnovers on the game, I think. But the first 10 possessions, it was Asia Wilson scoring a few baskets, and it was the Gamecocks throwing the ball away.
But it was decisive, and it was decisive very quickly. And when Crystal Dangerfield hit the three-pointer at the end of the first half, it was over before that, but that was just kind of the exclamation point on it. And I think for a lot of people, I think the frustration is now, can we ever, can South Carolina ever compete with UConn? I mean, is that, that's going to be, you know, it, at some point, unfortunately, it becomes a mental thing, and that's in all sports, and that's just not related to the women and UConn. I think that's kind of across the board, but it's just one of those things now where these games aren't close, and they're not close for a short period of time, and then all of a sudden UConn pulls away because they have more depth, or South kind of wears down, or somebody gets in foul trouble. This is domination basically from the get-go to the very end of the game. That doesn't mean South Carolina hasn't played close. I think last year up there for about a half, it was relatively within striking distance, and then UConn pulled away and made it decisive late. But, I mean, now that's – last night, I think we finally found the spread. I forget if you mentioned the spread on air, but I finally saw it late yesterday afternoon. It was about 18.5.
Wow. Well, which was, I think, the average margin of loss to the – for the Gamecocks in their six losses at UConn going in. And it was 18 at the end of the first quarter. It was 30-12 after the first quarter. And this is, with the Gamecocks, I thought they were slowing the pace down. That was clearly their game plan. They were executing their game plan to some degree. It's not like they got out of their game plan and Dawn Staley was on the sidelines ranting and raving and mad at her players. It was just simply that UConn was too good. I mean, they did everything they could to slow the game down, and that's what clearly the game plan was going in, to use your height advantage down low, go to points in the paint, make sure UConn doesn't get up and running too much. But when Carolina would help on guards or help on penetration, then that left shooters open. Shooters did not miss. Going 9 out of 10 would win a lot of three-point contests. Going 9 out of 10 in a game made this thing uncompetitive pretty quick.
And it just seems with Connecticut, when they get challenged, when there's an actual challenge in front of them, they rise to the occasion. I don't know of many other teams. Alabama in football is one, but it feels like when they get challenged, they rise to the occasion each and every time, and they take their game to another level and they perform. And that's, we've seen that firsthand. I'm not going to sit here and lie to anybody and say that I watch Connecticut basketball when they're not playing South Carolina. I've not seen this. I didn't watch any of their game against Duke on Saturday. But when they play South Carolina and I tune in, it's like Connecticut has decided to take it to another level, and there's just nobody in the country that can match them when they decide to take it to that next level.
So now they'll move on to take on Notre Dame, the one seed moving on after in the late game last night. They knocked off two-seeded Oregon, so it was a couple of one-versus-two matchups last night. The Gamecocks coming up short against UConn, and Oregon no match for Notre Dame either. That was a 10-point ball game. So that's how things go. Louisville and Mississippi State on the other side of the women's Final Four.
I have had a great 4 years. I wouldn't change anything. Coming to South Carolina was the best decision that I've made at a young age. So I wouldn't – I mean, of course – it's all fun, and I hate to see it come to an end, but at the same time, I wouldn't trade in anything for my time that I had at South Carolina.
Asia Wilson finishes her stellar career with 27 points in the Elite Eight matchup last night to UConn, 94-65, the final score. And this one wasn't close after a quarter where it was 30-12, and UConn could not miss from three in the first half, going 9 out of 10. Interesting conclusion, I thought. It was almost, not almost, it was definitely, I think, easier for the exit to happen in this way, Bill, because the outcome was not in question. And so I think it was easy to feel good for Asia Wilson because she played well. I mean, she did all she could. It's just that the Gamecocks didn't have near enough for – I mean, again, I know some people get rubbed the wrong way when we talk about UConn and the dominant program they've been, because the Gamecocks were the defending national champions and not UConn, and I get that. But UConn, clearly the queens of college basketball, and have been for a long time, and kind of reasserted that title last night for sure. But Asia Wilson takes a backseat to no one and has won National Player of the Year awards already and will probably win some more. And the way that she ends her career, I think, pretty fitting there, because it would be really kind of bitterly disappointing if UConn barely beat South Carolina last night and Asia Wilson doesn't play her best game.
Right.
There was no doubt that Asia Wilson kind of reasserted how good she was last night, and unfortunately for the Gamecocks, UConn did the same.
Yeah, 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 11 of 18 from the floor, 34 minutes. Just, again, Alexis Jennings gives them 15 points and 3 rebounds, but after that, not much help, as opposed to Connecticut, who had all 5 starters score in double figures and 2 girls. Dangerfield and Williams go into the 20s. And you're right. And again, I think it was so decisive, so quick, 54-33 at halftime, and it kind of – you don't try and take anything away from the season or from what they did, but it is one of those things where last night it was just evident how big the gulf is. And it's not just South Carolina. It'll be that way. Look, we talked about it last year. It was a one-game scenario. If Mississippi State and UConn had played 10 times, the odds are UConn would have won 9 of those. That Mississippi State got them on that one night. And the good thing about the NCAA basketball tournament is just like if UMBC and Virginia played 10 times or 100 or whatever number you want to throw out there, UMBC probably wins once. And that one night was the one night that they did it. Last year for Mississippi State, it was the one night they've got it. And for South Carolina, that was kind of how I felt last night. It needed to be that one night, and it wasn't. And UConn rolled, and Asia Wilson played well. But by the fourth quarter, when she talks about coming out, trying to get her hugs in before she starts crying, it was I think, maybe easier for her. I did notice it's weird to see – it's weird for me kind of being on Twitter after the game that the focus, I guess, was not on the loss and the end of the season, but the end of a singular player's career. Kind of like last year when South Carolina lost in the Final Four, it was the end of the run, end of the season, not the end of Sindarius Thornwell's career. And I get it, Asia Wilson's career and what she's meant being a hometown girl, entirely different. But it was strange to see it narrated like that via Twitter, almost more like a celebration of a career than the acceptance of defeat or the thought of a defeat.
Well, to me, I think that just shows you how much her presence has been in the women's college basketball game. I mean, she was the face singularly of women's college basketball from a player standpoint this year. UConn has so many good players, and they didn't win a national championship last year. Asia Wilson goes to the 4. She did things that have never been done before. First ever 3-time SEC Player of the Year. 3-time All-American at Carolina. What she did and what she meant, and the story of her being a hometown girl and what she did releasing that Players Tribune article over the weekend talking about dyslexia and her struggles there. And I think the example she set for a lot of young girls who are growing up and now want to be the next Asia Wilson, I think it's not just – we see it all the time in sports where – personalities go along with performances, and sometimes they don't, right? Sometimes you get a great player and then they just don't become stars for whatever reasons. Well, Asia Wilson has the star personality to go along with the what she does on the basketball court at a high level, and I think that's why it became what it became. And I saw a lot of Carolina fans appreciating that, actually. I know some Gamecock fans have the chip on the shoulder when they watch a national broadcast and feel like it's always against them and it's always geared towards something else. Well, last night you could not complain at all, because in a game that where UConn dominated, most of the second half was about Asia Wilson, right, like you mentioned, and everything that she's meant. And I think, too, it's not that she had a class of others around her. Had Alicia Gray and Kayla Davis stayed for a senior season and been on the court last night with Asia Wilson, the story would not have been as clear. It would have been a different type of narrative. Had Elena Coates been in Asia Wilson's class and they had both come in together as hometown products and elevated the program to national championship status, then it's a different type of narrative. But she is pretty singular. It's pretty obvious that she's the standout here in the Dawn Staley era. And I think everything was done pretty appropriately. And there's going to be plenty more time now to tell the UConn story in women's college basketball. Last night's story was Asia Wilson's career came to an end. I thought it was interesting that Dawn Staley mentioned that if she could have Asia Wilson for another year, she still wouldn't do it. It's time for her right. to move on and go on to the WNBA overseas, wherever she chooses to move her career and start affecting other people outside of Columbia, South Carolina.
I'm just trying to think, across the board, you don't see a player like Asia Wilson stay for 4 years. Maybe Tim Tebow is the other exception. I'm trying to think of anybody else who
Tim
stayed.
Tim Duncan was like the pinnacle of college yeah. basketball that I remember, the guy that everyone thought would leave after a junior year. No, he went against the grain and decided to come back.
Okay, and that was still before leaving. I mean, you wonder if Tim Duncan would do that. How many years would Tim Duncan make it now? I mean, because yeah, that was late 90s, right. and things have changed so dramatically.
And he didn't have the personality to go along with his star status. He just shied away from the spotlight. He didn't like any of that stuff. And certainly, I think, probably had a smaller impact than he could have just because that was his personality. That's also part of the allure of him, I think, for a lot of people, too, is that he just seemed like that didn't interest him, and he was always in it for the right reasons. Asia Wilson clearly didn't mind being a star and lived up to that in every single way. I think a lot like LeBron James, how the personality matches the superstar status on the court, where time after time after time, when challenge is presented, you always see these superstars step up to it, either on or off the court. And I think you can put Asia Wilson right in that same kind of vein. Clearly not the same kind of effect yet in LeBron James has had, and the same kind of longevity and all that thing. But she's the one that's the personality type that popped in my head thinking about how she's handled things.
Right. Yeah. It's rare. You're right. It's rare. We don't see that quite as much nowadays. And again, I'm not just obviously women's basketball, but across the board, football. I mean, I'm trying to think. Tim, again, Tebow would be up there. You mentioned Duncan. Basketball, we certainly don't see it anymore. It's amazing to see a guy like Malik Newman, who was such a highly thought of recruit, go to Mississippi State. Things don't pan out, so he transfers and sits out a year and then plays at Kansas. I mean, you don't ever see that. You see a guy who would have said, this didn't work out. Let me just go ahead and Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, guys who said, man, this didn't work out. Let me just get on the heck out of here and go into the NBA.
But Grayson Allen was such an anomaly this year for Duke, but he was never a superstar necessarily.
He was, and it's not for the right reasons.
Right.
Because people couldn't stay on their feet when they were around him.
He's a villain.
But I will say, and I love Grayson Allen for staying 4 years because you got to know him and you either liked him or you hated him. And college basketball needs more of that. And that's part of it across the board in women's basketball with Asia Wilson. People got to know her and you got to see that side of her. And it wasn't 1 or 2 years and then off to the pros. And I think that if those are the changes that are made to the college basketball game in terms of three and done, or if guys have to stay, that building those relationships with players and growing to either like them or dislike them, like the teams, dislike the teams because of the personalities on the teams, would go a long way to having a better regular season.
The narrative around the state of South Carolina has always been that it's a football state. The University of South Carolina is a football school. I think what we've seen here in the last 5 years with Sindarius Thornwell, who was a guy who could have gone to a bunch of different other basketball programs, a Lancaster native deciding to go with Frank Martin at a time where South Carolina basketball was about as low as it has been, and then Asia Wilson being a homegrown Heathwood Hall girl deciding to choose the Gamecocks over UConn, Tennessee, North Carolina, the cream of the crop in women's college basketball. They both had a profound impact on not only USC, but the state of South Carolina. And it's one of those things, Bill, I don't think we can fully appreciate the impact until it's years removed. Right. And we've been able to get more perspective about just how special both these players have been, both those runs, the Final Four run for the men, and then this tremendous 4-year run that Asia Wilson and Dawn Staley have had.
I feel like it becomes more special when you tell the next generation about it. You've got young kids, and so now you start telling young kids about certain players that you saw that maybe were in their prime. And this wasn't more than 10 years ago, but you know, I've got the 5-year-old son, and now telling him about Connor Shaw. I saw Marcus Lattimore put out the tweet yesterday. Connor Shaw was back on campus watching a spring practice, and you start telling, you know, you start talking about what Connor Shaw did. And that's not that far removed, right? Like, I mean, what Connor Shaw did is not that far removed, and it's kind of the same thing. It's when you tell the next generation, and in your mind, you're kind of making up the stories about how good that player was, and all of a sudden, maybe a simple 5-yard run becomes a 37-yard run where he shook all 11 defenders, stopped, got water, helped the coach draw up a play, and then ran the other 30 yards. It's one of those things, and I think that'll be it with Asia Wilson, too. The further we get from her career and the more that its memories and highlights, the greater that legend will grow.
That's similar, I guess, to B.J. Mackey back in the day, the SEC championship. That was a tremendous accomplishment, that first one in USC history more than 20 years ago now. But as it gets further and further away and there are no more championships to go with it,
right,
you see just how special it was, as opposed to getting used to a guy from Irmo who plays at South Carolina and it's kind of a local deal. Like when Asia Wilson just played at Heathwood Hall, you're like, oh yeah, of course she's dominating there. Found it kind of ironic that on the men's side of things, Zion Williamson making headlines last night, winning the McDonald's All-American Dunk Contest. He's now the next guy in the state of South Carolina. Unfortunately for those of us in the Palmetto State, he's moving to Duke to play his college basketball for what we all assume will be 1 year and then be moving on to the NBA. But he dominated the dunk contest, and it's really interesting to see the reactions on social media. Like, I didn't see anything in the dunk contest that I feel like I haven't seen many, many times, and a lot of times in games from Zion Williamson. But to see other people maybe seeing it for the first time or not as accustomed to seeing just the ridiculous athleticism on display, and whatever you want. Do you like finesse dunks? He's got them. You like the power dunks? He can do that too. He can do it all, and he's not just that as a basketball player too, which is the impressive part at being a high school guy.
Well, I think that's what's going to be fascinating, and I don't want it to be sour grapes, but his all-around game is going to be very interesting to watch at Duke and what he ends up becoming, because his ability to score the ball outside of 10 feet, when you match him up with other players who are athletically as not, maybe not as good as him,
but closer.
It's going to be – now, look, he's put up monster games in AAU, and that's the great thing. We talk about scouting and you talk about football recruiting, but that's the great thing about basketball recruiting in AAU. You go out, you might see them in high school and they play against lesser competition, but all of a sudden you put them in that AAU setting and you're putting them up against the guys that are also the top four, top five in their class, and the athletic ability is there. Zion Williams has done it. But now you're going to put him in that college setting. It'll be fascinating to see when coaches scheme him up and draw up game plans. And of course, they've got Cameron Reddish, and there was a big article, I think in SportsCenter recently about Cameron Reddish, who's actually one of the top players in the class, and R.J. Barrett, who's also going to Duke, who is the top player in the class. You put Zion Williamson in theirs, and Zion Williamson actually is the third option. It'll be kind of fascinating to see how his game evolves and what he does for Duke next year.
Odell Beckham Jr. is not quite that guy in the NFL. The drama this offseason is kind of taken to a new level, and I was not surprised at all by his latest deal that he wants to be the highest paid player in the NFL. I mean, who doesn't want to, first of all?
Right.
Now, what you do to back that up and how much you believe that and how much you're willing to stick to that, if he's going to not ever get on the field for the Giants this year until he gets a new contract, how long does that thing go? How much of a distraction does he become? Clearly, from a Giants perspective, you get the feeling that they've had enough. And sometimes these runs come to an end. Like Ndamukong Suh, really good player, but he got drafted by the Lions and they just couldn't hold on to him. He goes to the Dolphins, and clearly they weren't willing to pay him kind of market value, and now he's moving on to just a one-year deal. He's getting a one-year deal for a reason.
Right.
Because along with a really talented player, there are other things that come with having Ndamukong Suh on your roster in the NFL, and now he's headed to the Rams, which look like, on the outside, when you're playing video game GM, like you mentioned in the last segment, Bill, it looks like a really tremendous move from a Rams perspective, right? You got Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh beside each other. What can go wrong? We'll see how this thing plays out, because in real life, you got to deal with personalities and chemistry and all that stuff. The Rams had a really good team last year, and it looks like they just made a good team even better, but we'll see how that works out there. I don't want Odell Beckham Jr. on my team if I'm in the NFL. He's a really good player, but I think he's Terrell Owens and not even as physically dominant. I mean, he's really good, and he's a breakaway threat, but in the red zone, I think a guy like Terrell Owens, just from a physical standpoint, was a bigger threat to score a touchdown than Odell Beckham Jr. is when you got the ball on the 5-yard line, for instance, and you can just throw it up to a guy like Terrell Owens, or you can put Alshon Jeffrey in that category these days from a red zone threat. There are too many distractions. This guy's become too much of a cartoon character, I think, to be worth the highest paid player in the NFL, because along with that comes leadership and the whole thing, and you're also taking a huge salary cap hit, and that limits what else you can do. I understand why people go all in for a guy like Cam Newton or Drew Brees, Tom Brady, go down the list for quarterbacks, for a wide receiver with his track record off the field, I don't think it's worth it.
You know, he's 25. He'll be 26 this year. You've got four or five years left in him. Well, is that fair?
Depends on injuries, man.
He had one. He had a significant one this year. Only played in 12 games.
When you're Tommy Bowden used to refer to these guys as like sports cars or thoroughbreds, the guys who had the top end speed. But it can take a really minor thing to disrupt that. And you know, a lot of really fancy and expensive sports cars ends up in the garage. They end up in the garage a lot more than they end up on the road. Odell Beckham Jr. was like that last year. Now that's kind of been the exception, but you don't know how this thing's going to project moving forward.
Missed 12 games. Didn't play in 12 games. Played in 4 last year. 25 receptions, 3 touchdowns. You know, here's my opinion. You say you don't want him on your team. If I'm an owner of an NFL franchise, I would feel like my franchise is strong enough to handle an Odell Beckham Jr. personality. That's if I'm an owner. I would want him. I would take him. The kid is a dynamic playmaker. Does he come across as a Looney Tune in some of the things he does? Yes. And most recently, some of the things he's done with the video and some of the things away from the field, I get it. I would take him. I would want him on my team in a heartbeat. He has single-handedly kept kind of Eli Manning going the last few years.
He didn't even play last year, hardly.
And they went 3-13.
Yeah, they were awful.
And Eli Manning got benched.
I saw that, and I saw the outcry.
Hence, you take him away from Eli Manning, and all of a sudden, Eli Manning, all of a sudden you're benching Eli Manning. Now, whether you want to blame Ben McAdoo, but whatever. But nonetheless, when Odell Beckham's not playing, Eli Manning, when you take away a weapon like that, what franchise now, from the outsider perspective of not being a GM and doing a radio show with you, what franchise would I feel comfortable? I'm not saying they have the money. I'm not saying any of these have the money, but maybe the Seahawks, if you're willing to take him and put him there with Russell Wilson. Look, here's what's going to happen with Odell Beckham Jr., though. Here's what you have to understand. You're going to get him onto your team, and you're probably going to get 3 years of good, sane Odell Beckham Jr. where the chemistry is okay.
I'm sorry, what was that S word?
Sane. Like where I think he doesn't rock the boat. I think
what makes you think that?
I just think we've seen that in the past. I think you, not from him, but I think from players in general. Terrell Owens, which you'd get about one or two good years, two, three good years of Owens or some of these players, and then all of a sudden they become disgruntled, they become unhappy, there's a game that doesn't go their way. If I'm Seattle, I'd check into them, especially now that you're going to need some. You look at that division with the Rams and all of a sudden the 49ers getting Richard Sherman, and maybe the 49ers are going to be better. You better improve your offense a little bit. I would look at that, but I don't know if the Seahawks have the money. I mean, look, I don't know the financial aspect of who's got the money to be able to pay for an Odell Beckham Jr. and who doesn't. So it's kind of hard to just throw some of that stuff out there and say this is a good fit. But if it's me, I would take Odell Beckham Jr. I would make sure I have a quarterback, a strong personality quarterback that could handle Odell Beckham Jr. But also, we've never really heard Beckham Jr., to my knowledge, and Manning going back and forth. It's more of the stuff whatever he does with his touchdown celebrations and then proposing to the net, now kind of some of the off-the-field stuff.
I got no problem with being entertaining. It's when you're a big distraction and when you're saying that you should be the highest paid player in the league, well, there's a lot of responsibility that comes along with that. And from an owner's perspective, that is a risky investment, I think, not just from the personality standpoint, but also from the on-the-field deal now. We're talking about a guy who just had a injury plague season, didn't produce hardly anything. He said 25 catches, 3 touchdowns. Right?
Four games. So right. An average of 6 catches a game and just under a touchdown a game.
I mean, who's the last wide receiver that's been the highest paid player in the league? Has that ever happened? I don't remember that happening.
What do you got?
He looks to the intern. Terry hits us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox and says, take the hype from that big catch years ago. Odell is just a pretty good wide receiver. There's way too much hype surrounding him. I think that's taking it too far. I think he's the best wide receiver in the game when healthy. I don't think there's much dispute in that. Who's better than him? You going to put Julio Jones in there? Okay, I'm with you. I mean, but besides that?
We're not going to discuss Antonio Brown? We're just going to take Antonio Brown out of that situation?
There's three guys, right? Those three guys.
Yeah.
You're going to put anybody else in the conversation? I think it's a stretch. But he's right there. Don't say DeAndre. There's a reason we didn't turn the mic on by the intern. He's a DeAndre Hopkins Clemson guy. Disappointing outcome for the Gamecocks last night in the Elite Eight. 29-point loss to UConn. Randy was watching. Love Chevrolet phone lines. He joins us now at 803-404-6100, weighing in on last night's game and that Odell Beckham Jr. prima donna in the NFL.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Congratulations to the women's team. Pretty good season for them. I think regardless of the players that they bring in, they're going to bring in some good players. I just think the defense is lacking. And when you play in UConn, I think that should have been the primary focus. I mean, when UConn hit those threes in the first quarter that kind of split that game open, those were uncontested three-point shots. It wasn't like they were shooting them over anybody. They would throw the ball around the perimeter once or twice, and there was always somebody wide open. And South Carolina was playing man-to-man defense, and those guys were taking wide-open shots. You don't take the best players in the country and you put them out there on the court and you leave them open for wide-open shots. That's just one thing that has to be fixed. Anyway, a good season. UConn is UConn, so you keep pounding at it until you beat them. On Odell Beckham Jr., I just don't think the Giants. I don't think he should be the highest paid player, but he's a good player, and I don't think the Giants have they don't have the latitude to try to choose and pick. If you got a great player like that or a good player like that, you have to do what you have to do to keep those players. You can't worry about locker room stuff and all that. You need the best players available, and he's one of those players, so you need to do what you can do to keep them. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Randy. I hear what you're saying. 3-13 is 3-13. The Giants need playmakers, and when he's not on the field, they really struggle. But at this point, you have to mortgage your future to a large degree with Odell Beckham Jr., past this year. He's looking for a long-term contract. I don't think that's a smart move for the Giants at this point. If you could get something for him, that would be great. The problem is you're not going to get much for him with just 1 year left on the deal and him being who he is right now. So it's a really difficult situation unless you're going to go all in and say, yep, he's our guy. To me, he's not a New York guy, man. It's not the place for him, Bill, because he loves the spotlight and it's so bright there in New York. It's all about fit in the NFL to a large degree. This doesn't seem like a good fit. What do you think, Pete? Back out to the Love Chevrolet phone lines.
Hey, guys. Lifelong New York Giants fan here. I get kind of sick of hearing the Eli stuff. They have not had a running back in years, and they have not had an offensive line in years, and he is completely non-mobile. So they're totally teeing off on him because they know they can't run. And he's not going to scramble. And then last year you take out three receivers in one game. This isn't his fault. And Gettleman, I think, has it right by saying the first thing you got to do is rebuild the line and give Eli that time. And as far as Beckham goes, if you remember back some years ago, we had two really good players on the Giants who were drama guys like this, and Tiki Barber and Jeremy Shockey. And when they cut both of them, the next year they won the Super Bowl.
Oh, you nailed the timing, Pete. That's hour number two. Gamecock Larry, maybe our best caller on our program, our favorite 83-year-old caller for sure, yesterday boldly predicted a Gamecock win over UConn. How are you feeling about that today, sir?
I tell you what, they're going to beat the Golden State Warriors last night where they were shooting them long threes. But that's okay. Being a 70-plus-year Gamecock fan, I'll always follow the Gamecock. I will always be a Gamecock. I will never go against my Gamecock. We're going to be okay. But if they play like they played last night, there's nobody can beat them. Mississippi State is going to get spoused, you wait and see. But again, they do. I think the NCAA, they treat us like really stepchildren in the NCAA tournament. They send us here and there and everywhere. But that's okay. We ain't got no excuse. We lost. But Downstate has got she's going to have us back in it next year. We'll get in the tournament again. And another thing, being an old-timer Gamecock, I would put all my stock in Andrew Wilson. Yes, sir. But that's okay. We're going to be all right. I want to do that one shout-out to my friends at the pretty young women up at the QQQTC seed, and they had to give me some kind of long drawn examination the other day. That shit treated me nice. And all them beautiful young women in there, they were really great. But go Gamecocks. But the baseball team, football team, all of them, we're going to win the national championship within the next 2 years. Go Gamecocks.
What happened with
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I don't know what's even allowed to say about that.
What was that at the end?
National championships for everyone in the next 2 years.
Ah, okay. Jen, you getting a replay of that?
Let's let KC follow that, shall we? On the Love Chevrolet phone lines. Good luck, sir.
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
All right, you?
I'm doing real good, real good. And I got two things to say. And when I looked at that females NCAA tournament bracket, when I seen they was in the same bracket as UConn, and UConn number one and USC number two, I said something was up myself, and I was wondering, do the athletic director from Missouri guy in the pool with the NCAA? And I was like, you know, this is a setup. And number two, Asia Wilson going to be one of the best athletes that ever suited up at University of South Carolina. But if I had to put stock in anybody, if y'all paying attention to this young kid, they are advertising Zion Williams to be in the spotlight like LeBron James. They're already marketing him early. And many people don't think the NBA and certain people don't miss up these kids at a young age, but they do. And Zion, I put my stock in Zion because they're trying to market him like the next LeBron James. Name me one kid besides football players who had a basketball national signing day on TV lately, and that's all I got to say.
Appreciate it, Casey. I mean, we were just watching SportsCenter here, a bunch of dunks from high school games from Zion Williamson, and then a lot of the dunks from McDonald's High School All-American game last night in the dunk contest, not the All-American game. But, Bill, you mentioned it before. Zion Williamson's not even number one rated recruit in the country. We just all kind of default to that because we see him on SportsCenter all the time. He's clearly by far and away the most talked about high school basketball player in the last how many years? I mean, this is who's been talked about. Ben Simmons was talked about, but he wasn't in the same kind of breath, I don't think, because he's from overseas and the whole thing.
Yeah, Marvin Bagley would have been. Marvin Bagley would have been, but he reclassed and kind of jumped up very quickly. I mean, there's been guys. I think.
But yeah. I'm talking about the common sports fan, though. Like, that's what Casey's saying about being marketed like LeBron James. I agree with what he's saying there. It's very similar. It has the same kind of feel. Maybe not quite to the same level as watching those high school games in LeBron James' career. I feel like he was kind of maybe in the forefront of these games getting national TV hype back in the day. And Zion Williamson, though, from a social media standpoint, I don't even think it's an NBA or ESPN thing. I think this is a grassroots kind of thing. People see these things on social media, and you just hit retweet. You say, did you see that? You got to see this kind of thing. He's that guy who has captured the social media realm, I think, better than any basketball player at this point of his career.
He has. No, there's no doubt about it. And it's because of the dunks and
right, we saw the seventh Woods early on was like an eighth or ninth grader, right?
Yeah, I mean, he has because people, you're right, Zion Williamson is about the third or fourth best prospect in this class. He would be a little bit lower had a Marvin Bagley stayed in this class. RJ Barrett is going to likely be RJ Barrett's going to Duke. I mean, again, if you don't know, Duke's got signed. This is according to 24/7 Sports. Duke has the top three players in the class.
And they, number 10, right?
Yeah. Duke's.
Don't leave that one out.
Duke's done. No, they've got number 9. Sorry.
Oh, my apologies. So it's nine. Only four of the top 9.
But RJ Barrett is 6'7", 200. He's 200 pounds. He is a wing. I mean, RJ Barrett is actually the guy that should be getting a lot of publicity, and it's just a lot quieter for him. But he doesn't have the highlight reel dunks that Zion Williamson has. And it's going to be fascinating to see for me Zion Williamson at the collegiate level and how he fits in with Duke and then how he goes on to the pros. Again, to me, a lot of things that when you talk about buying stock in somebody, trying to figure out their future, where Zion Williamson ends up going professionally, and then the same thing with Odell Beckham Jr. I don't think he stays in New York. What if, let's just hypothetically, I mentioned Seattle. Again, I don't know anybody's financial situation, but what if Green Bay were to need that? Somebody hit me with a David hit me earlier on a text message and brought up Green Bay, just saying they need wide receivers. Now, you're shaking your head. I agree with you. Green Bay's not an organization that would take an Odell Beckham Jr., but let's say you put
him the other way around. I don't think Odell Beckham Jr. would have any interest in going to Green Bay.
And playing with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is a different discussion, but playing with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay right now, I don't know, man.
See, I who knows? Who knows what exactly Odell Beckham Jr. is thinking? But if I tell you.
I don't think he knows.
Yeah, but if I tell you, all right, I'm putting, you know, if I were to tell you, hey, I'm putting Zion Williamson with the Phoenix Suns, I don't know who Asia Wilson would go to in the women's draft, but then I'm putting Odell Beckham Jr. with Aaron Rodgers, I think a lot of people would all of a sudden, oh, I'm investing in Odell Beckham Jr. I do think he'll end up somewhere now.
Sure, but if you're saying Zion Williamson goes to the Cavs and gets paired with LeBron James, then it's a different argument the other way, right?
For me, yes, but I still would take Beckham Jr. because I'm interested to see where this conversation is going. Is I am not as sold on Zion Williamson as a professional athlete as I am a collegiate athlete. I think he's going to be really good at the college level because his game kind of fits that mold. How does he do at the professional level is going to be really fascinating to see, in my opinion. But with all that being said, and again, we'll look up. I'll see if they have the women's draft kind of order out and where
again I think you're getting stuck on the WNBA though. We have to remember that women's basketball at large becomes a much bigger deal every 4 years in the Olympics, and Asia Wilson is clearly going to be an Olympian, and she is going to wear Team U.S. I mean, she's already done it many times, not as an Olympian but as world championships, and the every single year she's led the USA team, and she's going to end up taking over that mantle. I mean, that's why we knew Dawn Staley's name mostly. I mean, she had a great WNBA career as well, but she was a gold medal winner and she carried the Olympic flag in because of her Olympic history. That's where I see Asia Wilson's career trajectory going, and it goes past just one particular franchise. It goes to, I mean, for that matter, Zion Williamson will probably be that guy as well, wearing a Team USA jersey. That's the difference with football versus basketball in this conversation. Again, at Sim Hill 107.5, where you can go and vote on today's Frank's Discount Tire poll question. Which stock would you buy today? Asia Wilson leading the way. Zion Williamson in second right now. Odell Beckham Jr. in third.
Just for the record, the WNBA draft is April 12th, 7 o'clock, so 2 weeks from Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So they have her going. There's a draft site with a mock draft. The website is called draftsite.com, by the way, has Las Vegas as the number one pick.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Well, that
means that means Las Vegas, but I don't know where Las Vegas is, like in terms
it's
of.
It's in Nevada.
Okay. Yeah. You
can gamble there.
The way that our team performed all year long under adversity, couldn't be more proud of our players and the way that they've handled themselves, and you know the way that they did not, you know, succumb to, you know, whoa, it's me, why has it happened to me? They just played it out, and we found ourselves in a place in which only us believe that we could be here.
Dawn Staley, after last night's tough loss to UConn, where Gino Auriemma makes it 19 Final Four appearances now, and his career passes Pat Summitt for the all-time most in either men's or women's basketball. And you talk about reasserting dominance. That's what happened last night with UConn, and it happened early on. Six of the first 10 trips that Carolina made resulted in turnovers, and 9 of 10 three-point shooting for UConn in the first half. It was a 30-12 lead after the first quarter, and it just was not going to be Carolina's night, despite 27 points from Asia Wilson in her Carolina career finale there. Quite the run for 4 years when you have your first year in a Final Four, first ever in school history, the second year a little disappointing in a Sweet 16 exit, the only year you don't get to an Elite Eight, the next year a national championship, and then this year, despite injuries, despite losing three players to the top 10 in the WNBA draft, Asia Wilson gets the Gamecocks to an Elite Eight, just ultimately didn't have enough around her to compete against the best in college basketball, which is UConn women's basketball right now. On the men's side of things, I mean, the favorite going in, I guess, is Villanova. I mean, that's the percentage favorite for sure. That's where, if you go and put a bet in Vegas right now, where you put where you'll get your most least return on investment if you bet Villanova to win the Final Four. But I mean, there's no comparison as far as the overwhelming favorite in women's college basketball with the four teams left. UConn will play Notre Dame after Notre Dame won by 10 last night against Oregon. On the other side of the bracket, you got Mississippi State and Louisville. I'm sure ESPN pulling for a Mississippi State win, so you get a Mississippi State and UConn rematch in a national championship game, last year's Final Four game where Mississippi State pulled the big upset. Even if you had that, the spread you mentioned last night for the Gamecocks, it was 18 points.
18.5 is what I think I'd seen.
And I would imagine that Mississippi State line would be about the exact same. I wouldn't think that you could get much less than that moving forward. I think maybe Notre Dame has played them a little closer this year, and then they just beat Duke by 13 in the Sweet 16 game. But that's where UConn is right now.
You know, and I wonder, Thomas sent in this morning on the Shepherd's Glass Twitter inbox, he said, in his opinion, it's a coaching thing. Dawn's style will never beat Geno, especially when Geno has similar or better talent. Mississippi State beat them with ball movement and knockdown shooters. We try and try and try to beat them by forcing inside and playing through our bigs. It's our thing, but it's not going to beat UConn. We've played them numerous times last few years, and it's never really been close. And I do wonder if that's the one thing we kind of talk about with UConn. They seem in these games to hit shots from the perimeter, and South Carolina really struggles. And I think that's another thing just last night. It kind of gets lost because it was Asia Wilson's last game. And again, that second half was more of like, all right, this is the end of her career. But South Carolina's not really been competitive with Connecticut in these seven games, or I shouldn't say the whole series, because some of it they were two entirely different programs. But in the last four or five games in which these two teams have played, where you've expected South Carolina to give them a run, it has not been competitive.
There's no doubt. And it's amazing to me how Mississippi State could pull the upset last year. And the Gamecocks have had so much success against Mississippi State, beating them for the SEC tournament championship, obviously, earlier this year. They had them on the ropes early on in Starkville in the regular season matchup. And that's the one game Mississippi State has figured out a way to beat the Gamecocks. A lot of times, we hear it all the time on the men's side of the NCAA tournament, comes down to matchups, and clearly the UConn matchup has not worked out well for the Gamecocks, but that's how it's worked out for pretty much everyone, with two losses since the 2013-2014 season, which is a ridiculous run. But I think it's the margin of error, or the margin of victory, that's the surprise in that thing, not necessarily the ultimate outcome, just that the Gamecocks haven't been able to play a little closer in some of those games. So the basketball season officially done now at Carolina. Again, it goes deep into March for the second straight year, just coming up short of the Final Four run in the men's side of things last year. Obviously, that didn't happen this year, but for the women, the defending national champions, we're not going to get a run deep into, I guess, what turns out to be April. But we will get the men's side of things. We'll talk much more about that as we roll on. We got a Carolina baseball game this evening. Davidson over at Founders Park. The Gamecocks looking to bounce back and snap a losing streak, bounce back from the sweep over the weekend at Georgia, and then get a little positive momentum heading into this weekend series, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday series against Tennessee. So we'll have that to talk about tomorrow. Who knows what else will pop up. Today we ended up going with the Frank's Discount Tire poll question. If you were buying stock today, who would you buy it in? Asia Wilson, the runaway winner this morning, as you might expect, the night after her Carolina career comes to a conclusion. 61% of the vote at Tim Hill, 107.5 today. Zion Williamson finishing in second place. Your vote for Odell Beckham Jr. goes in a distant third place at 11%, sir.
Yeah, it seems about right. Oh, well. I'll continue to defend him somewhat.
Until he does something else dumb, and then I never would have invested in that guy.
Yeah, that's true. That's usually how it works.
You blame the organization. Their organization clearly not as strong as mine would be. The new New York Giants football organization.
Yeah, man. My organization would be just loaded with big-time quarterbacks and vocal wide receivers. Maybe Dez Bryant and Odell Beckham Jr.
Oh, that would work out well.
Bring
sure.
in Jarvis Landry. I think I'd be onto something.
Be interesting to see how Dave Gettleman and he work out. Strong personalities there. Thanks for listening this morning. Early Game, 107.5 The Game.